Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining me today. Welcome to today's show, Up Close and Personal, about Conway Twitty with my special guest, his daughter, Kathy Twitty. Before I bring her on, I just want to share a little bit about her in case you might have missed our previous shows together. Kathy currently holds a metaphysical degree in the sciences, and of course she's been performing on stage for eons, first with her father and then on her own. She's currently also joined with her siblings to license and produce a tribute to her father's 35-year legacy. It's only make-believe, and you can find out more about that on conwaytwitty.com. That's conwaytwitty.com. I met Kathy last fall, and once we connected, it was kind of like our long-lost sister. When we get on the phone, it kind of time disappears, and we probably ought to bring a little clock or something, because we can just go on and on. It's like we're just trying to make up for lost lifetimes. It's pretty funny. But her love and joy and passion for life is absolutely wonderful, contagious, inspiring. I am so blessed to know her, and I love being in her company. She's an amazing inspiration to be friends with, and I'm honored that she's going to join me today to talk not only about her dad, a little bit about her dad, but in relationship to the spiritual, metaphysical side of him that not many people really knew. So without further ado, Kathy, are you there, honey?
I am. Hey, and you didn't tell them we talked for 3 hours the other night. I think more. It was funny. I said, Valerie, it's midnight. We got to get off this phone. And next thing we knew, it was 1:15. Hey, we did get off the phone eventually. Yeah, I'm here. It's so good to talk to you. I always love talking to you. You know that.
We're soul sisters. Yes. Time flies, I think, when you're, and we were playing catch up because there's just so many different things individually happening.
Yes.
In our expansion, but also it's just, you know, time flies when you're having fun, and I think
right. You
kind of don't realize that. But
well, there is no time really. It's just really. So just throw the clocks out and just talk as long as you want. That's the way I look at it.
That's right. Or until we get tired. And I have a few friends like I do that. And I always wonder. I wonder if when people get on the phone with me if they're going, uh oh. There's Valerie.
Oh, no. No, I gave as good as I got. I did. We both had equal talking time. So we could have talked all night. That's what's sad. If we didn't get to get some sleep.
Yes.
Somewhere you got to rest. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, you know, last couple times that we talked about soul contracts. And,
right.
You know.
You and I have one of those, too.
Yeah, we do. We do. And I'm kind of loving that because, you know, it's kind of sometimes you would definitely hold me accountable to things that a lot of people might either miss or, you know, not get. But you definitely
with love,
get
I hold
stuff.
You accountable with love as you do me.
Yeah.
And we came to bear witness to make sure that we stay on track so that we can evolve spiritually. And so, you know, somebody that truly loves us will not stand there and allow us to treason that contract with ourselves. And so we do that with each other. We lift each other up. And I had that kind of relationship with that as well. Most people think, you know, I mean, they think of Conway Twitty, they think of this big world-known superstar, and he was. But he was also a man. He was a daddy, and he was a grandfather. He was a husband. And he was a wonderful, wonderful human being and spiritual being combined. And so I knew this side of Dad. He, when Dad and I first met, it was November the 8th, 1958. And he was on tour, actually, when my mother went into early labor with me. And about 6 weeks early, I came, and I was in a hurry. I want to get here. And Daddy had two big events that day. I was born, and then his first the record, It's Only Make-Believe, was his first number one record and across the nation, not only this nation, but in 22 different countries around the world. So it was a huge, huge, huge record, and it began a career that lasted for 35 years. Daddy had 55 number one records, and nobody in the history of music has ever done this. I mean, in any music, not just country music. So he had a huge, huge career. And Dad was very spiritual from the time he was a very little boy. He was very sensitive and very kind, very loving, very protective. He had desires to be a preacher when he was very, very young. And he kind of got close to the church. And, you know, mind you, Valerie, I'm not trying to put anybody that likes to go to church down. But for Dad, when he actually wanted to be an evangelist. But when he got kind of close to the doctrine, not the spiritual side of it, but the doctrine side of it, he stepped back from it. And it put him on his metaphysical path. And he had some supernatural things happen. One time he and some kids were playing at the cemetery, and one of those huge cement cemeteries fell over on one of the little kids, and Dad was just little, and everybody ran, you know, scared them, but Dad, and he lifted that heavy concrete headstone off of that child, and he said it wasn't him, you know, that did it, because he was just a child, but he knew that there was angels and spirits that helped him with that child. And so that didn't surprise me, because I could see the light in Daddy. It was very obvious that it was there, and I believe that his success to have be able to, for somebody around the world to just hear your voice and be attached and attracted. When Dad died, people from all over the world flew to Nashville to say goodbye. And it was because of that vibrational light within Dad that attracted that. And they didn't know, most people didn't know, but that was the biggest side of him, was his spiritual side. He was a study of metaphysics from, a student of metaphysics from early on in his life. And he was a great teacher of mine. When I was 16, I had gone to my mother's church all my life, and I just went to Dad and I said, Daddy, I cannot do this. I can't go to Mama's church anymore, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but it just does not resonate with my soul. And he said, well, I've been waiting for you come and tell me that. I knew that you would. And he said, I want you to read some. And I knew when the time was right that I have this book for you. And the book was There Is a River by Edgar Casey. And it was about Edgar Casey's life. And it taught about reincarnation. And it taught about souls. And it taught all the things of Edgar Casey's belief system. And, of course, Edgar Casey was a Sunday school teacher. He didn't necessarily believe the things that he channeled either until he was much older. And so we shared. I dove into that river of consciousness of spirit, and Dad didn't shove me, although he knew that's where I would go. He was very loving and patient and kind, and he understood that we all have a path and we find our way. But every once in a while, you know, as a teacher, we're there to sometimes pick them up and put them back on path or nudge them to the right or left. And so he gave me, he opened that door that was already there. He just helped me open that within myself. And then we shared all of Ruth Montgomery's books and book after book after book after book. And then when I would travel with him, because I sang as well, I started at age 7. I loved to sit up in the jump seat in front of his seat on the bus, and we would just, the majority of our talks were about spiritual things. We talked about Christ a lot, the life and love of Christ, and we talked about the church. And he said, you know, I just have a hard time with anything that says that if you don't think the way that we think, that you're not going to be with, you know, go home to your Creator. He said, imagine, Kathy, out in the middle of the jungle, there's tribes that never saw anything to do with anything that they can't even read, you know. And he said, but they know to kneel. They know that they worship and they praise. And he said, so it's innate. It's innate with it. And that was the seed planted in my soul of everything is innate. We all have a right to that connection with our Creator. And it's up to us how strong that connection is and what we do to build on it. And so he was my he was a great teacher in my life. He was one of the great loves of my life. And then after Daddy's death, I mean, right before Daddy died, he was going to slow down when he turned 60. And we had a bunch of trips planned, and the trip that, as a family, and the trip that we were going to go on, he and I, was to the Edgar Cayce Institute in Myrtle Beach. I mean, not Myrtle Beach, but Virginia Beach. And I think it's North Carolina, but I get the Carolinas backwards. And so anyway, I know. And so anyway, we didn't get to go. We didn't get to go because Dad died 3 months before he turned 60. And so a few years later, I went. And when I was there, I could just feel Daddy all over me. And I talked to him while I was there, and I shared the experience with him as if he was standing there with me. And so when I left, I was in the car, and I was listening to spiritual tapes and CDs. I mean, that's what I listened to in the car a lot. I still was unable to listen to my father's music. It was too painful. But I had to stop and go to the restroom. So the next exit, there was a Cracker Barrel, and I thought, well, I'll run in there and use their potty. And so I go in there in the bathroom, and in Cracker Barrel, they play music, pre-planned music. It's all pre-planned. And I was only in there for about 4 minutes. And when I was in the restroom, one of Dad's songs came on the radio.
Wow.
And, I mean, of all times for me to be sitting right there in that spot, and I went, oh, my God, I knew he was with me. And I broke down in tears. And this poor, sweet lady in the restroom, which she was trying to calm me, I said, just, I'll be all right in a minute. But I knew he was there, and I knew that he wanted me to know he was there. And so we did get to go together, and it wasn't the only time that Dad made his presence. He did today. As a matter of fact, I was going to my middle son Charlie's birthday is today. He's 30, and I was going to have lunch with Charlie. And so, you know, I had that, oh, gosh, Daddy, I wish you were here. You know, you do that all the time when you lose a parent. And so one of the signs that Daddy sends to me is angel wings. And I looked down, and it was 11-11.
Oh, wow. It's
called, yeah. And so I know he's with me all the time. He, right after Dad's death, it was the week of his death, actually. And because we had this strong spiritual connection, I knew that Dad would come to me soon and that I would see him. And I was laying, it was about, gosh, 3 nights after his death, maybe four, that his physical death, that I was laying on my bed, and I looked over, and, you know, you don't sleep. It was a sudden death, and there's a great amount of shock after a sudden death. And I saw this white, misty, grayish cloud beside my bed, and I knew that it was Dad, and I was very, very still. And I said to him in my mind, I said, it's all right, Dad. You know, it won't scare me. You know it won't scare you. I would love to see you. I would love for you. I know that you're here. And then it vanished. And I thought, well, he's just not strong enough in the spirit yet to do that. And so I had a canopy bed. And then about 2 or 3 minutes later, this electrical light show of every color played above my bed. And then I knew that it was him. It was as beautiful as he was. And it just went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And I hadn't slept in a few days, and I fell asleep. And in my sleep, the phone rang in my dream. And I picked it up, and he said, Kathy, it's Dad. And I said, oh, God, Dad, you know, oh, my God, you know, it's so good to hear your voice. I just miss you. And he said, well, I tried to appear to you, but I just couldn't. And he said, but I can talk to you. And so we talked back and forth. And he said, well, I said, I just want to talk to you all the time. He said, you can talk to me anytime, baby. Let me give you the number. He said, oh, I can't give you the number. And it was funny. We laughed. He said, I'll call you. I'll talk to you for the rest of your life. And so I said, well, Daddy, have you seen the grandbabies? You know, and he said, oh, yeah, I've visited everybody. He said, Jimmy, my younger brother's children were very little. Taylor was four, and Mackenzie, or four or five, and Mackenzie was 4 months. And he said, I sing to Taylor all the time. He said, and I try to talk to Mackenzie, but she just crawls off. And so when I woke up, I got up to go for a walk around the grounds of Tweety City. And we all lived on the back grounds in condos, my brothers and sisters and I. And I saw that Jimmy's light, my younger brother's light, was on. And I walked by and looked in the window, and our sister Joni and Jimmy and his wife Stacy were sitting up. And it's like 4 a.m, but, you know, we couldn't sleep. And so I went in. And my family, the rest of the family, doesn't necessarily share in a lot of my belief system. So we don't really get to talk about it. When Dad died, that really, I have a little niece she's not little, she's in her 30s, but we were able to share that. But it's not something that is in my family. And so anyway, Jimmy was talking, and he said, I sure miss Daddy. He said, I was putting Kayla to bed, and she was four, and she said, look, Daddy, Poppy's in the corner. And that's what the baby, grandbabies and great-grandbabies call, their grandbabies call Daddy. And Jimmy said, no, now, Kayla, you know Poppy's in heaven. She said, no, he's right there in the corner. Poppy sings to me all the time. Well, I sat straight up because that was the joy. I mean, I had just woken up from Daddy telling me that, and I shared that with Joni and Jimmy and Stacy, and their mouths just fell open. So Daddy's been, and then a few weeks later, a medium flew down from Canada to meet with us as a family. And he called and said he would like to come on his own time to talk with us, that Daddy had a message from Dad. And so I was late getting there. And when I walked in, he looked at me and he said, you're Kathy, and you've been seeing lights. And as I said, I said, yep, that's right. And Daddy has in my lifetime, since his death, appeared to me in the physical. I've seen him 3 times where he's appeared to me, but he's very busy, and I try not to. I know he comes when I need him, but I try not to. You know, he's on a spiritual journey still, that if he has to turn around and come back and see about me all the time, he can't get his work done. But he's busy about his life, and he believed in the many realms of heaven. He believed that, you know, that when Jesus said, in my Father's house there are many mansions, if this were true, I would not tell you so, that he was talking metaphysically about a parable about the different levels of the spirit and the different levels of evolution. And so all the beautiful, warm, and loving things that, you know, that we get to that drink from the river of consciousness that exists where all souls live, that we get to drink from that from both sides of the veil, and we get to draw from that and channel that. And he was so selfless. He said that about his talent. He said, I am just a vessel through which my talent flows. He never took credit for his success. He never took credit for his gifts, and they just flowed through him. And he was so very unassuming that my mother says, you know, your father probably made $100 million in his lifetime, and he was so selfless that he didn't even spend $1 million of that on him. He gave it back. Yeah, he was a wonderful person, and I know that anybody that knew him and was ever, people still come up to me today, 16 years after his death, and will stand there and cry and tell me the stories of how he affected their lives. And if they were lucky enough to know him in the physical, or if they just heard him on the radio, and he gave without, he believed that if you gave a gift, if you bragged about it, or if you expected it something in return, it was not a gift. He was just so selfless. It was amazing, and he lived what he believed on a daily basis, and he inspired me to do the same. And I try so very. I have a wonderful mother as well. I don't want to sound like I do, because she's very is, and she's very strong and very spiritual. And you know, her taking me to I tell people my mama took me to church, but my daddy took me to God, and I needed both to be the whole person that I am and that I had to grow to become. And I still hear my father's voice, even today, many things he taught me 16 years after his death, things that will just come up of, you know, if my life gets off balance, he would say, you know, Kathy, you know, if you get things right with yourself, then your life will fall in place around you. So if something's wrong, look within. Or he would say, you know, all the answers to all the questions are right there within your reach. You don't have to go too far to find it. If you go on a long journey to find a short answer, then you're really going to waste a lot of time. It's really right there. And so these little things that he would say are still with me today, and my children, when I'm gone, will be saying them. They'll be going, "What? There's my mother's voice ringing in my head." He knew, though, from metaphysically and spiritually, he knew when he was very, very young, singing was a big part of his life, and he was very attuned to his intuition was very fine-tuned, and so he wound up on the stage. We won't go back to his first number one record. He believed, "It's Only Make Believe," and he believed that it was a hit record, and so he went in and recorded it, two songs, "It's Only Make Believe," and another song, and the record label back then chose the singles. And they chose The Other Side, which was a good record, but very good record, and it went on to be a very big record in time, but yet the one that Daddy, It's Only Make Believe, Daddy believed was the hit, was on The Other Side. And so when it didn't do what they wanted, it was just a one-shot deal that Daddy quit singing. He just said, "How could I be so wrong? I just can't believe I was wrong." And he actually went to work on my grandfather, my mother's father's farm, which is a joke because Daddy could even hammer a nail on the wall. He was a musician. I mean, he was creative. He just didn't think like that and thought of it. It's hilarious. And one time Mama asked him to saw something for her, and he sawed the table in two. And I mean, he just was not made like that. Luckily, Mother could do anything. Mother was the fixer. And so anyway, a few months later, the phone rang, and it was a disc jockey up in Cincinnati, Ohio, that told Dad he had one of the biggest records that ever was up there. And this station broke the record, turned the record over to It's Only Make Believe, The Other Side, and started playing them. It caught on like wildfire across the world, and it went on to be one of the biggest records of the 50s. And even when Dad met Elvis, which they didn't know each other, but they were from the same area, Elvis was opening in Vegas, and he sent for one art. There was every big artist in the business was out in the audience for his return to the stage in Vegas, and Elvis sent for one artist, and that was Dad, that he always wanted to meet. And so Daddy said he walked back there, and Elvis started singing It's Only Make Believe as Daddy was walking towards him. And he said that Elvis told him that they were soul brothers. And
wow.
that they shared their metaphysical belief. Mm-hmm. And as well as did Wayne Newton when he met Dad. What Dad said when he walked into where Wayne Newton was, that Wayne Newton was singing his back to it was a rehearsal, and it is back to, you know, the audience because there was nobody in it. And he said that Daddy walked in the room, and Wayne didn't know he was coming into the rehearsal. And he said he stopped, and he said he turned around and looked square at him and stopped everything, and he just came and hugged him. And he said, he knew immediately when his energy entered the room, and they shared a metaphysical belief that they traveled in the same, the same level of where creative people like that gather, because, you know, like attracts like no matter where we are. And so, but Daddy believed that his little family was from the same soul group, and he taught me about soul groups when I was just a little girl, and he taught me about soul contracts, and he said the most important contract that you have is with yourself. Everything and everybody else comes to support that. They come to serve you in a big way or a small way. But if you're not true to yourself, Kathy, then it's very difficult for people that have a soul contract with you to link up with you on the level that was of intention. He taught me a lot about intention and how you could tell within yourself the answers are within. It's like, you know, Jesus isn't out on the moon somewhere. We've talked about this before. You don't need like Santa Claus keeping a list and checking it twice. He's within our souls. That's where he resides on a vibrational level. And I believe that Dad's musical vibration was very, very powerful and his spiritual vibration was very, very powerful. And I was attracted to music myself because of the vibrational pull, the magnetic pull of it, and because it was such a big part of my soul that there was no way I could not go there. And as I decided to retire from that business after many years in it, to step away from it, I was very, very hard for me because it's all I knew. I started at age 4, and I was 30 at the time, 31 right in there, and so I thought, I went to Dad, and I said, what do I do? I mean, it's all I know is how to sing. What am I going to do? And he said, will you tell me what's your favorite part about singing, Kathy? And it can't be the applause. You're not like that. He said, what is it? And I said, tell him the stories, Dad. I mean, it's connecting with other people and touching their hearts with the stories of the song. And he said, oh, you've got a lot of stories to tell, Kathy, and you will. You'll tell these stories. He said, but you know, he said, you need to take some time and recuperate because you've been through a long, hard, you know, career. And then when you start telling your story, he said, it'll be powerful. He said, but Kathy, your story won't begin to tell your story until my life ends. And I said, what?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I said, you know, should I be 100 years old, Dad? And so he said, no, you know, because then after that, not long after that, a few years after that, I was asleep and I had a dream and I had a visit from one of my guides. And he said, Kathy, your father is supposed to live to be 77, but he has an exit from we have more than one exit we can take from our physical body if we're done with our journey.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, so your father's going to have an option to leave that body and pretty soon, within weeks. And he said, and it's going to be up to you to take over providing for the family like he did. Well, that scared the life out of me. I mean, I said, oh, no, you know, I'm not ready. Daddy can't go anywhere. And he said, look, this is his contract. This is his thing. And he said, this isn't your decision. And I said, well, there's no way I can take care of the whole family like Daddy did. And he said, oh, yes, you can, and yes, you will. So I jumped up, and I grabbed the phone, and I called Dad in the middle of the night, woke him up, and said, oh, Daddy, you know, you better take good care of yourself. And he said, Kathy. He said, no, Kathy, don't worry about it because, you know there is no death. You know that no matter what, that, you know, that everything will be as intended. And he said, you know, I'm not planning on going anywhere that I know of. But he said, if that's the contract that I made, then you know, it's just the body that I leave. And so 6 weeks later, you know, Dad passes away. And I was
what's so interesting that you said about, and I really want you to keep on going, but you know, there's so many people that don't have that preparation in that dream. That's
right.
What that dream reminded me of. So
right.
I'm glad that you
shared.
It
still shook me to my core. I still wanted, you know, but what I'm okay with, what I was okay with, I'm still not okay with it. It's a good thing we can't give 20 years of our lives to be with the ones that we love for 5 more minutes, because I would be dead already, because I would have traded that. And I understood from that Dad you know, journey was his own. He was on his own path, and it was selfish of me to want him to stay with me when he had that choice. He helped me to understand that nothing happens to the body without the soul's permission, and that you know, this is free will. This is our free will, and he exercised it, you know, in 1993, of June of 93, when he chose to leave that body. But he did. Wait for all of his kids to get there to be with him, and so we could be with him when he left. And then he left after the all of us were standing there, and it was a sacred moment, you know, that you just cherish. And I know he never leaves me. I know that he's with me always, and it's not just my daddy, but everybody's mommies and daddies that have passed and loved ones. But for me, it was very, very personal, and the dream helped me to absorb the shock. Mm-hmm. And then within days of Daddy's passing, we were in a legal battle with the executors of his will. And he had been married for a few years to, he was married to our mother for 30 years, had been married for a few years to a younger woman. And the battle with her and the executors for everything that Daddy had, not to get into this because I don't care to get into it, but everything Daddy had left in his will to us, his four children, there was a battle, and knocked down, friggin' dragged out, I call it, and in the end, we won. In the end, we changed laws, we won all that we inherited, and that battle, you're talking about purification through fire, that battle showed us who we were, and the line that when I drew a line in the sand, it was within days of Daddy's death that started, and I drew a line in the sand, and I told anybody, I said, I'm on Daddy's side, and anybody that's on the other side of that line, it better look out, because hell hath no fury like a Scorpio that's mad. And so, you know, and I said, you know, this is Daddy never turned his back on us, and I'm not going to turn my back on him. And anybody that does not honor his will or his wishes is in my path of mowing right over, and I will. And so, and because love is a great, powerful force, and one to be reckoned with. And so we had love on our side, and we did win. And we had to go to the highest courts of Tennessee, but we did win. And they overturned the lower court judge 100%, and we changed the laws. And in that battle, oh my gosh, the most wonderful, beautiful people came. The most amazing spiritual. One night, I wanted to see Dad, and I wanted to talk to Dad, and I had never been. At this point, never been to a medium ever, and I decided I wanted to go see a medium, and so I went to the spiritual gathering down at the Coliseum, and laying on the floor was a paper that said Hendersonville medium at Carol Eve, and I picked it up and I said, tonight it said, and so I said to my angel, thanks. And so I got it up. I go get my sister, who didn't know where we were going. She didn't have a clue where we were going. I said, let's just go with me. Just trust me. So we get out of the car at this house, and we go in, and we walk in the door, and there's this man and woman sitting on the couch. And it was all sun shining out. I mean, it was just sun just going down. And the woman and the man looked at Joni and I. They had no idea who we were. And the man saw tears pouring down his face, and hers too. And he said, Do you feel that spirit? And she said, I do. She said, that's one of the most powerful spirits I've ever felt. He said, do you know it? Because we were standing right by where they were sitting. And she said, no. She said, but whoever it is, it walked in with those two girls, pointed at Joni and I, my sister and I. Mm-hmm. And she got up and walked right and looked us right in the face and said, do the words, hello, darling, mean anything to you at all?
Oh, wow.
I know, Joni and I crumbled right there in front of her, and through that night, her reading to us was all Dad, and we got to talk to Dad for the first time since his death through her on a very personal level that night, and since that time have met with many wonderful mediums, throughout the years that Dad comes through and talks to us and talks of things that only we knew and things that only he would know. And what a beautiful, beautiful experience it is. I couldn't urge anyone any stronger that if they have lost someone and they want to feel that person's presence, to find a gifted medium and go and open your heart and open your mind and let them flow through you and let them flow to you, and they will. And so anyway, Carol Reeve came to the night of the opening night of our musical and as my guest, one of my guests, and I was sitting on the front row. We wrote this musical about Dad's life, and similar to the Patsy Cline musical, Always, and it was very personal. And the room was packed, and people were going crazy. The Conway is just phenomenal, our Conway, and our Loretta, all of them were. But anyway, I was sitting on the front row, and three times during the performance, during the show, I swore Daddy's eyes were in Glenn, looked
wow.
right at me. And so, I mean, you know, you shake your head and it's a flash, you know?
Yeah.
But I could see his energy all over him. And so afterwards, Carol, I went up to hug Carol, and the same woman who I'd met all those years earlier. And
mm-hmm.
she has retired since. And anyway, she came and she said, "Well, your dad's been talking to me for the last few days. There was no way I couldn't come. I told him I would, and I'm here. I'm here for you, but mainly I'm here for him." And she said, "You saw your dad tonight three times, didn't you?"
Now, Glenn was the one that was, representing him, yes?
Yes.
Glenn
played Dad, and so
yes.
So I was in an interview with Glenn months later, and he said, the guy said, had seen the show, and he said, "Man, you know, it's like you channel Conway. I mean, that's the most amazing thing. I mean, it's like it is Conway." And he said, "You know," he said, "every night before I go out," he said, "I say a little prayer, and then I go over," he said, "I find me a quiet place, and then I talk to Conway, and we go out there together every single night." And
wow.
he said, I can't do that. I couldn't do that, what I do, without him. And so, I mean, we have people come up and say that they think that it was Dad. They think that Dad never died, and that's Dad's way of coming back to,
mm-hmm.
you know, into the business. And
wow.
I said, "Oh no, I promise you, I wish he was here, but he would, you know, the musical represents Dad at a certain age." I said, "You know, he would be heading towards 75, and he wouldn't, you know, he wouldn't look like that anymore, but he is here. He's here in spirit. Wherever there is love, wherever two or more of us gather in his name," and that's not just talking about, it was talking about love, where there is love,
mm-hmm.
you know, they will come, and this, when it's genuine, and the spirit knows the difference. And so when we're visited by our spiritual loved ones that are in the spirit, it has to be pure. You know, it has to be pure. The channel has to be open, and it has to be pure. They cannot communicate with us. There is no, you can't fool them, you know?
Right, right.
They know the truth. They flow right through us, so they know our hearts, and they know the truth. And so anyway, Carol was there that night, and it was kind of a, funny that Dad would come, and he has come through her many times to talk with me and to other members of the family and to Mother even. It really opened Mother's eyes, a lot of these things. And so,
wow.
Yeah. So anyway, it's real special. And then of course Daddy has grandchildren, and he was a big influence on their lives. And his death was very, 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 very hard on all of us. And then since his death, Daddy has great-grandchildren, and or Poppy does, because that's what they call him. And I have three. I have the great-grandchildren of the bunch. And anybody that gets on Facebook and goes to Kathy Twitty Jenkins can see the pictures of them all, because I post them all the time. And
yes,
and,
you do.
Yeah, I do. And so one of my grandchildren, I have an 11-year-old grandson named Chase, and two-and-a-half-year-old grandson that's a brother to Chase, named Wrigley, who I just had lunch with. And then I have a 3.5-year-old grandson named Benjamin, and it is my daughter's child, my daughter Angela. She's the youngest. And when he was born, when she was pregnant with him, she was very sick through the whole pregnancy. And when it was Mother's Day, Angela had a, you know, with a sonogram of the baby, and she brought it to me to see, and I erased it. I didn't know how to work the machine.
Oh,
and
no.
It was a VCR. I did, and oh, my God, I was just crushed. And so I went right down, and for Mother's Day, I bought her, you know, where you get to see the baby in the 3D, where you can actually see the baby. And pardon me, I live near a hospital, and there's somebody, I hope they're okay, there's sirens. So anyway, I went and bought her that. Well, you can't see the baby. You don't do that till you're right before you're 30 weeks pregnant, 28 weeks somewhere.
Yeah,
the baby's big. Where the baby's big enough.
Yeah, about 20 weeks, I think they can start seeing it small.
Right. But nearer the 30 weeks, you know, the baby grows so much that are right in there somewhere. But anyway, so we made this appointment. I made an appointment for her, you know, weeks before the baby, about 9 weeks before he was supposed to be born, so that I could replace this video that I destroyed and make it special. And we all, Mother and Joni and I went, my sister, we go in groups. And we're sitting there, and the baby, Angela's laying there, and there's this big screen, and I noticed the heart rate was really high because I had preemies. So the higher the heart rate, it's a girl. The lower the heart rate, it's a boy. The higher the heart rate, it's little. You know, I mean, the lower the heart rate of the baby, it's a bigger baby. And I noticed it was high, but I thought, man, that can't be right. It was 300.
Wow.
Well, normal is 150. So I thought, well, I don't know what I'm thinking. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know what I'm seeing. I don't, you know, I'm lost my mind here. You know, I don't know what I'm doing. But the guy stopped the session, and he said, excuse me a minute. And he asked Angela to get up and walk around a minute. And he went to the phone, and then he comes back, and he said, I'm not supposed to do this, even though, you know, I think they're some kind of a radiologist or something. But anyway, he said, but my wife is a midwife, and I want her to talk to you. And he handed the phone to my daughter. And she said, your baby's heart rate, your baby is in arrhythmia and from the heart rate, and you need to get to a hospital as soon as possible. And something is not right. And so off we flew to the hospital, to the same hospital where Angela was born at Baptist, and Charlie. And Angela was 8 weeks early as well as Charlie.
Wow, that's an interesting legacy that you guys are. Exactly.
Well, I was early. Yeah, and my little brother was early. So, but anyway, we get to the hospital, and, you know, specialists start coming in from everywhere. And they say they're going to watch the baby, that its heart rate, and I said, let's just deliver the baby. And they said, no, they felt like it was too soon, that they would like to give the high doses of the medication that they would give the baby through the mother to get him well. And I said, oh, Mo, you know, what could that do to her? And they said, well, it could stop her heart. And I said, deliver the baby, you know. So long story short, 2 days later, his heart rate is still that high, and the doctors are going back and forth. And so I told them, I said, if you don't deliver this baby tomorrow, I'm taking her to another hospital, because everything in me told me that he was in danger and that he needed to be delivered. So that night, it was about 2 a.m, and Angela, they had given her something to help her sleep because she hadn't been sleeping. And they came in and, you know, situate the heart monitor. She was connected to the heart floor herself. They were watching her heart. And I laid down and I closed my eyes, and I started reciting the Lord's Prayer in my head. And I said to myself, oh, my goodness, you know, why am I, you know, this isn't normal for me. And I mean, within 2 minutes of my starting to say the Lord's Prayer, the door flew open. Nurses came from everywhere. I sat up, and I could see the baby's heart, you know, falling, heart rate falling.
Yeah.
And then Angela's blood pressure started to drop. And so, of course, they had her unplugged and down the hall, and I was right behind her. And it all happened so quickly, you know, that they threw her on her side to get oxygen to him and to try to, and she kind of opened her eyes and looked at me, and I thought, I just said, I love you. What can you say? It'll be all right. And so they go flying through the doors with her, and there I stand. It's like a movie, you know, and mm-hmm. I hit my knees, and a few minutes they came out and said, well, we have your daughter stabilized, and the baby's here, but he's not breathing. And it disappeared again. A few minutes later, they come back and say, they're still working on him. And a few minutes later, they come back and say, well, we've got a heartbeat. The doctor came out this time. And he said, the neonatal doctors are with him, and we've got a heartbeat. This was the same doctor that had taken care of Angela when she was born. He was a young, just out of med school, that was looking me in the eye. And he said, now, you know, we think the baby isn't going to live beyond 8 hours. It was 9 minutes that he didn't breathe.
Wow.
And I looked at him and I said, I don't want one person to speak one word of this to my daughter. You talk to me, I will tell her anything that needs to be said, but I don't want her to know this. And so he said, well, they're going to rush him out here in a minute, and we're faced him towards this way, so you can stand here, but we can't stop. And I saw him, and there was an immediate soul connection. There was a soul contract that I knew was powerful. And so I went down to see him a little bit later, and in a NICU within 15 minutes. And I also have a doctrine in divinity, but I don't use it. That's how my kids say, Mom, you're preaching to me. That's about it. And I'd like to say, I don't pray out loud. It's a very personal thing to me. And I said, but I'd like to say a prayer over Benjamin, if y'all don't mind. And the head nurse was standing there. And, of course, they're all crying because they all think he's brain dead. And so you couldn't touch him yet. And so I laid my hand beside him. He was in an open isolate. And I said, you know, little man, I said, you are a child of God, and you have a right to life and love and wealth and abundance. And I just lift you up into the, you know, the white light, healing light and of love and consciousness to, you know, to be whole, where you are whole. And I want you to know that whether you choose to stay, you are loved. And if you choose to go, you will be loved the same. It is your choice, and you are loved no matter what. But I'm here. And I want you to stay, and I love you. And your mother is here, and she loves you. And, you know, if we have any weight in your decision, I want you to know that. So he did survive, and he has no brain damage, period. He's the most beautiful little being. People flock to him. He's so loving. And he's a total open channel. But a few months after that, I was at once a year here in Nashville, we have a gathering. Yes. and so I was there, and I was just wandering around, and I wandered into this they have little seminars, and so I sat down, and when it was, there was this woman in there, and she kept looking at me, and when it was over, she came up to me and said, I need to talk to you, I have a message for you. You have a question for me, and I have a message for you. And I said, okay. She said, I'm not going to charge you. I said, I don't care about that. Just what, you know. She said, well, she said, it's about a baby. She said, she grabbed her throat, and she said, he didn't breathe. And she said, I can't breathe. And then she said, he didn't breathe. And she said, and your question? I said, what was that all about? She said, let me tell you. She said, this baby's mother and father, he's very highly, highly sensitive, very spiritual little soul. And she said, he could feel the disharmony between his parents. And he repelled, he retreated back to the arms of his guides. And they were trying to soothe him and help his soul to know that this was a life of intention. That, you know, and he didn't want to, he said he didn't think he could do it. And she said, in the corner of my mind stands a man, dark-headed man. She said, he's your father. I said, yes, my father's in the spirit. She said, yes, he says he's your father. And she said, he went to this little soul, and he said, I know, don't be afraid. He said, because I knew and loved your mother in the physical, in my last life. She was my granddaughter, and there's not a more loving heart that I know than hers, and I promise you that you will know great love in your life. And he said, and your grandmother was my daughter in my previous life, and she will be a great spiritual teacher for you. And she will make sure that this part of you is nurtured. And so, you know, he convinced him to go back into his body, his soul. And she said, but you know what guided him back to his little physical body? And I said, no. And when I told you this the other night, I couldn't
hardly
stand.
I know, we started crying. I know, I get tears in my eyes too.
I know, she said, but what guided him back to his physical body was the sound. He heard, followed the sound of your prayer. He went right back towards your voice. And so when his little heart condition was, I couldn't tell my daughter any of this. It was too raw. And she's actually agnostic, believe it or not. And so, she, you know, this isn't her conversation that I've written it for her. But we haven't discussed it. It's very, very raw, hard to talk about. But when his little heart problem was fixed, and he's like nothing was ever wrong with him now, she gave me a card that said, "My broken heart was mended, and now, Grandma, it belongs to you."
Oh.
Yeah, I know. And so, as I love all my grandchildren with a passion, but this little fellow. There's a powerful soul connection, and I believe that I will mentor him from a teacher level as my father did me, and that he will remember his little adventure in his lifetime. We talk of spiritual things all the time, and he's just three, and I believe he will be another channel through which, you know, a powerful channel through which his talents will flow, and I believe that my dad will flow right through him in many ways and guide and teach him from the spirit, and the day will come when I will guide and teach him from the spirit. But so, you know, my father's metaphysical teachings in his life as a young child and a young entertainer live on through his spirit and through his children and through his grandchildren, even 16 to 17 years after his death. And the spiritual student that he was, whatever he achieved in music, Valerie, was nothing compared, and it was great, but it was nothing compared to the evolvement of his soul while he was on this planet.
Well, we know that a lot of people have beloved, I mean, like, you know, the appearances can be deceiving. You know, one thing, I got chills, and it's so funny about the aha moment, because we always learn, Kathy, I always learn more about my friends when I interview them. It cracks me up. It's like, oh, my gosh, I didn't know that about you. But we've talked about this story, and among other things, but I was thinking about what you said about the exit plan.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there are no accidents, and we talk about that. But
just divine intervention.
Yes, divine intervention. But I was thinking about, wow, that he was on the other side for Benjamin.
Mm-hmm.
For Benjamin rather than here on this side.
Right.
And how powerful the dynamics of that is, because, you know, one of the things that I'm getting more and more open about is the whole thing about bringing spirit mediumship out of the woo-hoo, out of the, you know, out of the esoterical,
yeah.
And oh, that's scary. It's like, you know what? It's a dimension. It's a dimension that has a different, you know, alchemy, where the body's not held in that dimension, but we never die. You know, life is always there, and you just gave me this visual through Benjamin's story, and I think it's going to be powerful for him as he grows up to know that both of you and were working connected, like energetically connected, on both sides of the you know, the between the physical and the the non-physical, and what a blessing for so many that have had loved ones cross over, that have had children cross over, and it's such a powerful message, because you knew distinctly. I mean, this woman didn't know you from Adam. And
no, actually she was from another state. She had no idea who she was talking to, it was intended. But you know, Dad, you know, we all, our loved ones see us from the other side. We can't see them, but we can feel them. And if we're quiet enough and we're still enough, you and I have talked about this many, many times, and it's in that stillness, when we quiet our minds, that we can speak and we can communicate. But fortunately, they get to peek in on us, you know. they pop in, pop out, you know. And sometimes I say, Dad, turn your head, because I'm mad now, tell this person that, you know. And so, but you know, one good thing, Dad, you know, Daddy always understood, and my sister, that Joni, when Dad died, we'll go back to that, she was sitting out at the cemetery, and it was 1 year to the date of his death, and she couldn't get over it. I mean, she was just not getting over it well, and it was hard, but, you know, when you understand that, you know, to be absent in the flesh is to be present with the Creator, you go, it's not so, there's a beauty there, there's an acceptance of it that they're fine and that you'll be with them. And so I sat down with her, and she was just sobbing, and I said, you know, Joni, how frustrating for Daddy. He can't even comfort you. He can't break through this thickness around you, this sadness, and how sad that, you know, he wants you to live your life. She said, but I miss him, and don't want him to think I don't miss him. And I said, oh, he knows you miss him, you know, Joni, but you need to let go of some of this sadness, because how sad for him. He wants to see you live your life. He wants to see you happy. He gave you life so you could have a life. And she started to dry her tears. And she said, well, so I said, you know, Daddy knows that he'll see you someday. He's not worried about that. And she said, well, how will he know us? Because we're young, and what if we're old? When we die, he won't know what I look like and won't know what you look like. I said, Joni, I said, our souls are cut from the same cloth. I said, he would know you in the middle of the universe, in outer space, in total darkness. If you were both swimming around up there, he would know you you would be drawn to each other like a magnet, and he would know you the second that he breathed you in spiritually. And I said, he knows you. You know him. And there was comfort in that for her. And my father's words came right out of my mouth to my sister. And so, you know, these spiritual knowings that we have, that we share, and you as a teacher, Valerie, a great teacher, and me as a teacher, you know, we try to share the love, you know, to share the warmth and to share the wholeness that is there for all God's children to experience. And all we have to do is, you know, I call it God, we call it Creator, some people call it Universe, it's all the same source. It's called Source, and that is, you know, we all come from that source. It is innate. And all we have to do is take our cup and drink from it any time, and let it fill us up, and over again and again and again, and as teachers to share that to those that are thirsty, and nourish those that are need the energy that we can give them. And so this is what Daddy was to me.
I love it so much, Kathy. We're about 1 minute before we.
I see that.
Get
I'm
off
sorry.
No. Don't apologize, because you know that's one of the things you have.
Well, you know me and you, we could be on the phone a whole another hour.
But share. You know, if you go to Facebook and you want to talk more with Kathy, you can look up Kathy Twitty Jenkins. And she will, and just let her know that you did hear the blog talk. Her siblings and her are putting together a musical, a legacy.
It is put together.
It is put together. It's already launched. And you can go to conwaytwitty.com and check that out.
And learn all about Dad's music, too.
Learn all about his music.
But if you have any more questions about their spiritual relationship, definitely seek Kathy out. Kathy, I so appreciate you joining me today. It was just such a beautiful process, and I'm excited about the things that we're doing in Nashville and expanding upon in the metaphysical realm. So thank you.
Look out, Nashville.
In Nashville, yes.
Look out, Valerie and Kathy are coming.
And if you, and we're going to put the post show notes on tweakingyourvibrations.com. Please check that out. Kathy, big hugs. Thanks, everybody,
in my big chat room,
Truth of Life, guest 1879, and the rest of the guests. Thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate, love you. Until next time, remember, who you are is more important than all the roles and identities you wear in the physical land. We thank you. We love you. Bless you. Till next week. Bye-bye, everybody.